The spirit of the Swanee is hallowed grounds for festival goers of all types. This year's Hulaween, the eclectic festival that has emerged as the park's most prominent, will feature many great acts as always. We sit down with one of those acts, the self-proclaimed Afro Beta, a world-renowned Miami-based electric pop duo, and discuss music and the 20-year road that led to this year's Hulaween. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. I'm your host, Josh Johnson, and today we have not only a special guest, but a massive guest. Joining me is one half of the world-renowned Miami-based electric pop duo, Afro Beta, and we have Kusi Amador. Thank you so much for joining me, Kusi.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Thank you. So let's jump right into this thing. The thing that will bring you to us is you guys will be performing at Hulaween this year. Have you ever been to a Hulaween before, Kusi, or will this be your first one?
I have not. This is going to be my first time. We did play another festival at the park called Resonate last year, I want to say, and it was a lot of fun. I have fond memories of the spirit of Swanee Park because I also went to school in Tallahassee at Florida State. So yeah, I'd been there way back in the day.
Oh, so you are family. From all my research, I did not know that you went to Florida State. And so there is another local connection. Absolutely. We are on the phone with a homie.
Yes, right.
So,
that is right.
Kusi, you guys, from your vantage point, I'm sure that you are going to love this festival. The energy of Hulaween matches you all's energy so much. It is just a match made in festival heaven. We know that you're going to enjoy. For people that are coming, for the visitors, what can they expect from Afro Beta this show?
Well, I have some secret plans that I'm working on. I just recently took an immersive theater workshop, and I'm really enjoying thinking about conceptualizing the shows in a more immersive way so that the audience doesn't necessarily just feel like they're watching the show, but that they're participating in the show and part of the show. So I have aspirations for that. And of course, you know, just something unexpected, something new. We are writing new tunes. Mm-hmm. So you're definitely going to hear songs that are not out yet. So that's always fun and cool to be able to share and see the audience's reaction to songs that they may not have heard before. And yeah, costumes, of course, it's Halloween, so we got to get dressed up.
I'm so glad that you used the word conceptualize, because for me, in this show, researching my guest is like a passport. I get to go on a cheap vacation just from researching the different people that I get to chat with every week. And my research on you guys wasn't just a passport by plane. It was like taking a spaceship because you guys are so incredible, especially conceptually. Does a lot of that come from your background in theater?
Yes, absolutely. I don't know. For me, it just feels like such a natural extension of being on a stage and performing that even though, like in the last couple of years, I started playing bass in a rock band, and that's a completely different energy and a completely different vibe. There's something to me about the honor of being on a stage that makes it so I feel like I need to present in a certain way. Like, I know it's super cool to get up there and just like, I'm in jeans and a t-shirt, I'm just like being myself, and there's something to that, I think, that is very real and connects to the audience. But for me personally, it's just not what lights my fire as an artist. So when I get the opportunity to be on a stage, I want to present in a way that is powerful for me. I mean, in some ways it's kind of like similar to the drag aesthetic in that you kind of put on this superhero outfit, and this is like an amplified version of who you are. So yeah, you know, absolutely.
You know what that speaks to, hearing that answer? To me, when I heard that, and I know that you said that a lot of that was about you, but that seems like the highest level of artistic endeavor, because it also seems like you're doing it for the audience. And so let's talk about that. An answer like that strikes me as somebody who's also still a fan of music and understands what people are coming to see. And so talk to me about how it feels to play in spaces that you would have also been just happy being an audience member in.
I feel like you're quoting me speaking, because I've literally had that conversation before where I have said, you know, I'm such a huge fan of music and I would attend these festivals and shows. Was I not playing happily? Like, I would pay a ticket and go to these places. And the fact that we get to go and perform is just like such a bonus, because I am going to hang out. We have a collaboration with a track with Anna Moya, who's going to be performing on Thursday. So we're going to get up and do our song with them. So I'm going to get there a little bit earlier than our set and, yeah, hang out for the weekend. It's going to be so much fun.
Speaking of, I'm sorry.
I just realized that I kind of like didn't actually answer your question. But yes, I do feel like my experiences as an audience member watching other performers that I felt like went above and beyond what necessarily just a musical performance can do. Inspired me in my own work. Yeah.
It's incredible. So now that part I had never heard. So I did channel you cosmically. The next thing that I'm going to ask you is something that I have heard you say, and it speaks to your sound. When I was doing research, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I remember you saying something like the sound of Afro Beta et al. Is an homage to growing up or living in a tropical place like Miami. You guys have become such a fixture in the Miami music scene. I mean, you're world renowned, but Miami, you're monumental. Talk to me about how Miami has directly or indirectly influenced your sound.
I just feel that growing up, especially in the culture of the Latino culture in Miami, both Tony and I, Smurfio and I, are both kids of Cuban exiles. And so, you know, my school here, when I was in elementary school, all my teachers spoke to us in Spanish, even though the books were in English. And there's something to the music that you hear at family parties and the dance culture that I grew up with when I was in high school here as well, and electronic music, you know, all of that informs like the things that bring you joy. And when you come down to the part of even rap, like, oh my God, I'm so obsessed with, like, we could go down a whole rabbit hole of hip hop, but like, so all of that stuff, like when it comes to the point of you get the opportunity to write your own stuff, it kind of just seeps into the music, whether it's syncopation, you know, polyrhythms, all of that kind of stuff, tempos. You just kind of feel like, if you kind of look in hindsight, you realize like, oh yeah, there it is. It's all seeped in there. But of course, like lyrically as well, just off the top of my head, we had the opportunity to collaborate on a compilation that was the 50 year anniversary of the song Moon Over Miami, which is an old kind of like 50s tune. And so we did our own kind of interpretation of that. So there's definitely references to Miami and everything that kind of conjures for our imagination.
Sure. During that answer, you use such a great word, steeps, like a tea bag releasing.
I'm drinking tea right now.
And, you know, when you said that, I have a big imagination, and I could imagine the tea bag of Miami kind of seeping into the water of Afro Beta. And when I was listening to you guys, you know who I heard in a lot of your music, which is kind of serendipitous of your name, was Fela Kuti, you know, the innovator of Afrobeat.
Yeah.
You have this song called Head Games. And when it first came on, I was like, oh my goodness, that sounds like
Afrobeat. Is it Afrobeat?
Yeah, exactly right. It was incredible. Aww. And you guys fuse so much, so effortlessly, sounds like. Talk to me about what it takes to harness your sound, or maybe in your case, unleash it, because you guys are just a beautiful spectacle. What inspires you? What music do, what, who are some of your inspirations, I should say?
Wow, it's, there's just so much of influences for me. I mean, Bjork is a huge influence for me. Tori Amos, Celia Cruz, Prince, Caroline Polachek, more contemporarily. I love her stuff. And Tony is like so inspired by Van Halen and Eddie Van Halen specifically in the way that he plays. And we love listening to new music too. So we're always kind of getting inspired by the newest generation of kind of virtuoso musicians. There's a festival that happens here in Miami once a year called Ground Up Music Festival. Mm-hmm. And that festival has like all these incredible players, like who will be artists at large or do workshops, like Esperanza Spalding or Becca Stevens or Jacob Collier. And like the nerd side of us is so inspired by all of that too. It's kind of all over and across the board, because I also really love dancing and love dance music. So whether it's something kind of repetitive or just going on the dance floor, closing your eyes, feeling the sweaty people around you, like I feel like there's a moments for that as well.
Absolutely.
To kind of like be inspired by, and when you're in the studio recording, you kind of feel for yourself too. Like I think music is such a tool for people to use in different ways, and so like you think about like how can this be used? How can this be used for somebody? Like, are they going to be dancing and sweating to it? Are they going to be, I don't know, digging a hole and gardening? It's like so many different types of things you can do when you listen to music, but yeah.
Sure. You also said nerd in your last answer, and you made my ears spike because I'm a nerd. And you raised the bar when you said Bjork. Nobody ever says Bjork, and I just don't know why. She is so incredible. Army of One, Pagan Poetry. You know, I could go on and on and on how she's such a lovely musician, and the fact that that was one of the names that you named, it just adds more to your coat of many colors, because it seems like you're a crafts person, and I love crafts people. So my next question is, when I went to your Instagram, I noticed that we had some of the people that follow you are mutual friends of mine. And All of them had one thing in common. Yeah, there was about 15 or 16 of them, and all of them had one thing in common. They were all kids of Miami. And so I asked them, I said, hey, what do you think of Afrobeta? Or how do you like the music? Or, you know, different conversations for different people. Do you know what the number one answer was? Now, some people were just like, oh, they're incredibly dope, or you got to hear the music. And I would say, I've been listening to it. A lot of people, there was probably 7 or 8 of those people that said, oh, they're just entrenched in the community. They're a band, but they're always doing something in the community. And that is a word that drives this programming. I love the word community. Talk to me about how your music has afforded you a community and helped you build a community.
That's such a great question. And it's so kind of integral to keeping your spark going throughout your career or throughout your work or throughout your life. Because if there's only kind of a self-serving version of it, once you kind of put out your first record and you get all that excitement out, that's it. You'll fizzle away. There's no longevity in that. So I think for us, creating community in Miami and being a part of the music community in Miami has continued to nurture our craft and our work. And what keeps us going, and it's what keeps us here. I mentioned earlier that we have a collaboration with the band Anamoya. Mm-hmm. They're really good friends of ours, and our Miami music community is really tight. And everybody is participating and working with other people, and we're all just like crafting and working together to make stuff happen, whether that's something like Miami Bloco, which is a, integrated intergenerational samba percussion ensemble that I'm a part of as well, doing workshops for people and kids, and just to get to people to play music. You don't necessarily have to be a musician to make sound. I'm also hosting a community workshop coming up in September here in Miami for artists of different disciplines, but just to kind of, it's a series called Lala for artists here in Miami, so people can kind of just come together and learn from other people's practice. And that's free for artists. And another thing that comes to mind is our dear friends who started Miami Girls Rock Camp, which is a camp that happens 1 week in the summer for girls and non-binary kids to just come together. They make new friends, they write a song in a week, they make a band, they make a logo, and then they perform a week later. And that's also super inspiring because you're like, how do I take so long to write a song and these kids just like did it in a week, so those are just off the top of my head some of the things that come to mind that are community driven and community based. But sometimes community just means that people feel safe at your show and they want to come and they see friends that they haven't seen in a long time. And so sometimes that's kind of underrated too. Like, it doesn't have to be all this crazy stuff that you do out in the world. It just has to be a place where people want to come together.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, there was no hyperbole there. They meant in the community because just those things that you named off the top of your head, not only were they expansive in how many they were, but you're not just touching the stage, you're touching lives. While I have you, Kusi, and I know you're busy, just a few more questions. One of them that I wanted to hit was something that I thought was so incredible, and it was about the film that you guys were a part of, Birthright. I thought that that was so incredible. Was that just a life-changing experience for you?
Absolutely, because the opportunity to it was kind of like a dream that you have about peeking into this box, a dark box that you've been very curious about for a long time, and you kind of thought it was going to be out of your reach forever. So going to Cuba for us felt very out of reach for so long, beyond, all of the politics around it and family opinions and all of that stuff. It just felt like we're so disconnected, even though it's so close. And so when the opportunity came about with a volunteer organization that brings skateboards over there, it's called the Amigos Skate Cuba. We just jumped on it, and I had been chatting with a friend of ours who's a director that wanted to. I thought we were gonna maybe record a music video together or something. And when I told her, yeah, we're planning this trip to go play in Cuba, she's like, oh my God, that's such a great story. I want to shoot that. And I said, all right, let's do it. So it really was, from the director's perspective as well, a kind of peeling away at identity and kind of really tuning into, well, what are you? What do you feel? Who you are? And how does this place that you feel like you're such a part of and yet you've never been to has formulated your personal identity without ever even stepping foot onto that place, which is very weird.
Yeah, I
So
heard
all
you.
of that exploration ended up, being a part of the film.
Yeah, I heard you say that it was a blogger or something. He said that it just touched me. He said that you perform like free people. What did he mean? Free-spirited people, or because of the adjacency that or the peripheral nature that you have to Cuba from America? What did he mean by that?
That was such a touching moment because that journalist writes for a blog which is anti-government and very they're advocating for freedom of press, which there isn't any over there. There's one kind of newspaper and that's about it. So if you're doing something else, you're off, you're off the mark. But he I think what he meant was that there's an oppression there of creative expression, and that our performance was an example of something different than that, and an offering of something different, which is very touching. And in my conversations with musicians there, the duo that kind of ended up being our Cuban doppelgangers, Ia She mentioned that they had gotten a call from the government before they opened up for Major Lazer, and she had to say, you know, they had to submit their lyrics and they had to submit, you know, all of the things that they were going to do at their show, which for us as artists here in the States is like, well, that's crazy. You know, like I don't need to send my lyrics to the government before I go play a show. And they had all these rules they were supposed to follow. So I think we have a, you know, culturally now we're in a really tough place in the US and politically. And I think being over there just gave me such a respect and perspective. And now I understand why my parents are so fiercely patriotic and defend the US so much, even when younger folks want to criticize, because there's little things like that that we just have no awareness of our that we're benefiting from, you know, the privilege of that, which is pretty great.
Thank you. Yeah, that's how I took what he said too. And I was hoping that I wasn't mishearing it just because it was an emotional moment, because it really was. I mean, you guys do perform like free people in the way that you're free spirited, but to have it from his point of view, to it was just a powerful moment. So you guys have performed at the biggest festivals in the world, Ultra and Glastonbury. Does a band or artist like Afrobeta still have ambitions?
That's a good question. I mean, the ambition is just to continue to draw out of ourselves better work. I mean, we always feel we're getting better at what we do, whether it's songwriting or production or, you know, craftsmanship, songs, like all of that stuff is just the journey. So I feel like the aspiration is continuing the work and being able to share it with more people. If I have a short-term aspiration, I'd say I'd love to get a booking agent for the next record, you know. Yeah, like all of that stuff, all of the business stuff that keep going. But long term, I don't know. I think that's I'm more kind of just with my head in the ground to just like keep going forward.
And that makes sense, because if I could describe your music, it would be available to its own imagination. And so I love that its creators are still available to their own imagination with their ambitions. Kusi, it has been such a pleasure having you on. Obviously, we couldn't wind up almost 20 years of a splendid career into 20 minutes of an interview, but I appreciate you giving me that. And I appreciate you all at home for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. Thank you, Kusi.
Thank you.